This episode of the 9-8 podcast is proudly brought to you by Flare Audio.
Hey guys, this is Hoss, aka Mark Hosking from Perth band Carnival, and you are listening to the 9-8 podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the 9-8 interview here on the 9-8 podcast. My name is Dave Ellis, and this week I have an amazing interview. I am interviewing one of the brains behind the amazing five-piece progressive rock outfit that is Carnival. Mark Hosking, otherwise known as Hoss, joined me for an hour-long chat all about a whole bunch of stuff that we've been postulating about on this show for quite some time, including new stuff from Carnival, as well as, hey, how did you do that awesome stream, as well as a bit of a side tangent into a couple of other little things as well, because that never happens on this show at all. It's absolutely an amazing interview, and I do just want to take a quick second as well to mention that before we jump in, just a quick reminder to everyone listening that if you aren't subscribed already, please follow or subscribe the podcast wherever you're listening. Whatever app it is, whatever program it is you use, we don't care. We don't discriminate. Just follow us on there, subscribe, and send us a link. And hey, if you really feel that way about the show and you love it, by all means, share it as well. Leave us a review and share this show with your prog friends. This greatly helps us to expand the reach of the show. No more babbling from me. Let's jump into this interview. Mark, welcome to the 9-8 podcast.
My pleasure to be here, mate. My pleasure.
This is awesome. I'm as the listeners of the show know, I'm a massive fan of Carnival, massive fan of your guitar work and so on and so forth, and your just general other work as well. It's fantastic to have you on the show. And I do want to start with a little bit of a story, actually. This is actually not the first time you and I have spoken. This is a bit of a weird one, but in 2015, you and I met in a men's bathroom in Nottingham in England before a show. It's a really weird one. You were in Nottingham, you were playing a show, and we noticed, my girlfriend at the time and I noticed that you were playing. We went, oh man, we'd just seen you like before we flew out of Sydney and we got to go again. So we actually came down to the show and you and I had a chat before the show, which was very, very interesting. I seem to remember you were wearing thongs. But,
I think I do remember that. I kind of do remember that. I think we were doing some other media of some form in a room next door. And I remember going to the toilet and chatting to some Aussie bloke who I now know is you. And yes, I was wearing thongs. I remember having a jacket on and thongs on because it was freezing outside, but we'd just come off our tour bus. So I was kind of, and I remember the media we were doing was all kind of waist up stuff. So I was being very Australian.
The news reporter idea.
In the Sheriff of Nottingham's homeland, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so there you go, which I think is just a little hilarious little anecdote to start the show with.
Awesome. Well, we're old friends then if we've met in the men's toilet.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's where all the fun happens. So I want to kick this little interview off by asking you first and foremost, how are you guys going at the moment? You guys are in lockdown over there. We're in lockdown over here because of basically a limo driver and such. And your friends and your family and so forth, are you safe? Are you doing well, you know, physically and mentally and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. No, I appreciate the concern, man. Yeah, no, we're all good, man. We're all very good. We tend to ride these things, you know, sort of ride the waves as they come and go, the bows and the troughs. But I mean, it's a crazy world, right? It's a crazy world out there, and you've kind of got to adapt and evolve with it and make the most of the situations. I guess the downside is I haven't kind of left Perth in 18 months since a mad dash back from London when the first kind of rush of COVID hit. The downside is not getting to tour as much and not to play some shows and not tour the world. But the upside is obviously more family time, more studio time, more writing time, more, you know, I've kind of made my C, D, E, F, G lists of things to do that I never get a chance to touch. And I've pretty much crossed off most of the things on them now. So
that's good.
It's nice, you know. Sometimes you do, it's the tangents aren't always bad things. You know?
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll come back to the writing and studio time a little bit later on. What I do want to ask you about is you mentioned there that you've got to be adaptable. Now, something that we've been talking about on the show for quite some time is this advent of live streaming that seems to have taken the world by storm almost. You've got a lot of people doing these live streams, whether it be a true live stream, like, for example, Voyager or Caligula's Horse did earlier, or more of a live-streamed DVD almost, like what you guys did, which, by the way, was absolutely fantastic. Thanks, man. Good.
Thank you.
We've been wondering on the show here for quite some time about the process behind that. You know, I mean, specifically, I mean, you know, the process, the manpower, how long it took to organize, you know, the success of it and so on and so forth. I mean, can you take us through that? How it all sort of came to be and what it all looks like behind the scenes?
Yeah, of course, man. Of course. Yeah, I guess starting at the end first and working back to the start, I think we were ecstatic with how that thing came out. We had an idea and a concept of what we wanted to do, and we kind of put that to work and workhorsed it and workshopped it, and then did something that we weren't sure was going to work or going to come out. And just, you know, as you do, you surround yourself with intelligent people who are good at their job, and it seemed to come together. So, you know, from the end perspective and looking back before looking forward, we were very happy with what came out and what we ended up with. And then you go back to the start, and without that knowledge, the perceptions change. So you're back to the start and you're thinking, oh man, so many people have done live streams. They kind of suck, let's be honest. I mean, very rarely had we seen a good one. I think the best one I'd seen at that point was there's an Aussie band called Powderfinger that did one from Brisbane, which was very polished and very clean. But in the same way, it still had that raw live feeling to it, which is what we love about these things. And I think that's the thing. You sit down and you say, well, what do we hate? We hate that it's sterile. We hate that there's no one there. We hate that it doesn't really represent the live show. What do we love? Well, we love raw and we love music. We love when you can get across your passion for something when elements are taken away from you that you have no control over. So that was a big thing for us back in the early days. And then even before that, you know, you go back to the very first teardrop of an idea, and that is, as usual, just someone having a drink, someone who's a little inebriated and says, oh man, everyone's doing live streams, we should do one, you know. And then there's the sigh, and there's a no, I don't think so. And then it's just a little idea that sits in your brain for a while, and you said no, and you were never going to do it, but it sits there, it doesn't go away. And COVID does its thing, and tours get further away, and you miss lots of touring opportunities, and you get a little frustrated, and then that frustration turns into energy, and that energy turns back to the ideas in your brain, of which one was, even though you said no at the time, was to do a live stream. So it's like, oh well, okay, you know, I guess now we're seriously considering this. So once all that kind of mental rubbish gets out of the picture and you know you're going to do it, then there's 1,000 options, isn't there? It's like, how do we do this? What do we do with this? How can we make it different? And I think the thing with Carnival, this band, this project, whatever you want to call it, the thing with us is it's always been a case of, if we're going to do something, we're going to do it our way, and we're going to do it a bit differently, and not in that kind of wanky aesthetic way, but just in a let's have fun with it kind of vibe. You know, let's not try and fit into a cookie cutter here. Let's make this our own and do something a bit differently with it. So then you go to extremes. So you start thinking, well, okay, let's do it out in the middle of nowhere. And this was the first idea, which I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say, but we were going to do it out in the middle of nowhere. You know, very much to do with nature. And for various reasons, COVID mainly, that just wasn't possible. So then you fall back and you think of other ideas, and then it becomes, well, hey, you know, there's this beautiful theatre in Perth, the Heath Ledger Theatre. It's adorable on the inside. It's got a great sound. What if we were to do that a well-shot video in there that is really us playing live, you know, with the Proviso. We get to do two takes of each song.
Okay.
That's really us playing live that has no audience. And then we release that, you know, because I think one of the good things about this band is we are, you know, fairly, you know, proud of our live show and proud of what we can do. And the other good thing about it was the fact that the only shows of the entire decade of Sound Awake tour that we wanted to take, you know, pretty much worldwide. the only show of that whole thing we got to do was in Perth, and that was like a month before we were going to do this live stream thing. So we did that, and it was great, and it was beautiful. It was a really emotional night, and we thought, oh man, we can't just let this rest, you know. So we took it to a live stream, and we made that happen. So there's these things, there's these ideas flying around, there's yeses, there's nos, there's concepts. And then, as I said, man, you find the right people, the people with the smarts to make these things happen visually and sonically in the best way we can. And we're lucky to use some great people for that in Perth and pull it all together. So that's really the crux of it, you know. And then there's 1,001 logistics around that, and COVID-related problems. We had some of our crew on the other side of the country that had designed the lighting show and you know built this great show that we wanted to have there that we couldn't, so we had to kind of do all that remotely, you know, time code based, and there's all these trade offs you make, I think, when you're dealing with things like COVID and dealing with things like live streams. So where it's a live stream, it's not live, but it is live. So you've got to try and marry those concepts and those ideas and make the most of it, I think. And I think we kind of got there in the end. You know, cut a few corners, but never kind of cut a corner that we weren't prepared to sacrifice. So we were pretty happy with the result in the end.
I mean, you should be, because it was a hell of a show. It really was. It was so polished. Thanks, man. And the audio was just amazing. It was really, really well done. You mentioned in there that you wanted to add and keep some elements in there of the live, sort of the live elements in there. One of them that I found was really interesting was that you guys were talking in between songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is what you do on stage, right? I mean, everyone does that on stage. You talk and so on and so forth. And it was really interesting to hear that. What I'd be interested to know was, of the stuff that hit the cutting room floor, was there anything that hit the cutting room floor because, you know, someone swore or they dropped a guitar or, you know, they fumbled something or they made some comment they couldn't have about a prime minister or maybe a, I don't know, a deputy premier or something who likes to sue YouTubers? I don't know. Like, is it...
a few Kevin Rudd moments. No, nothing really, man. I mean, as I said, like the only adage we made to the fact that it was going to be live was, you know, you're spending a lot of money on this. You want to get it right, but we don't want to be cutting and we don't want to be snippeting things. So the only adage to the fact that it's live is that we got to play each song twice and we picked the best version of that song.
Yeah.
So that left a little bit on the cutting room floor as far as, you know, bits in between, because you could quite easily just sort of chop from the end of the song to the start of the next song.
Yeah.
And I think most of the people, I think even the director and management were just saying, well, let's just cut, you know, cut real quick, cut from that song straight into the next song and, you know, make it sound like a really well-polished. And we were like, it just doesn't, like, we still want it to feel live. Like, we need a bit of time in between songs to feel like we're getting ready for the next song and let people feel that space that you feel in a live performance. And I know it's weird because there's no crowd cheering. There's nothing. It's just dead air. But I don't know. I think it kind of married to the music, I think, to have that dead air a lot of the time. And I think that really helped us feel like the final result was a lot more like a live performance than just a chopped together concert.
Yeah.
Again, one of those kind of sunset magic things you got to make a decision on when you're doing live streams. It's almost like editing a movie or a film clip. It's a little bit different, and we tried to stay away from all those things, but there's some of them you just cannot stay away from.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And as far as, you know, strange things that were said, most of them are in there, man. There's some pretty stupid – we're pretty stupid people. So there's a lot of stupid comments already in that live stream. So, it's pretty funny listening back to some of it.
Do you think live streaming is here to stay? I mean, when – this is going back a little while now, but Hoggy, the other host of this show, and I tried to put on a thing called Prog-Aid, which Tank was actually involved in. Tank is one of the Carnival crew who's helped us get this this interview going for those playing along at home.
Solid human being,
And, absolutely amazing human being. And he had actually figured out some tickets for us, and obviously then COVID happened and all that kind of stuff, and the whole thing just kind of fizzled out and went to shit. We were actually going to do what we call the remote attendance ticket for that. So wherever you were in the world, you could tune in and we'd just live stream it to you. Do you think that's going to be the norm? Because I'm kind of sensing that things are picking up in the live streaming industry. They are, you know, people are starting to do that whole remote attendance thing to various different things around the globe. You know, is it something, is it an area that's going to really take off, and is it going to impact the future of live music?
It's probably a two-pronged answer, man. I think there's, you know, without saying cliche yet, I think it is yes and no. I think there's elements of it that will definitely take off and definitely be a lot more consistent moving forward. You know, when you've got so many streaming platforms, you know, your Flicks and your Stans and your, all of them, just when they're now putting on a lot more music content. I know Parkway Drive had that thing on, and there's some other bands that, you know, are having some real impact on that. And there's a lot of Aussie guys pushing for that as well. That's part of it. That's part of the live stream, whether it's, you know, live stream or just something that's played back that is music content on a streaming platform. It's all kind of the same thing. And once people start gelling and rolling with that, you know, it's pay-per-view boxing all over again.
Exactly.
But then, you know, incorporating that element into it is very different. And I think the day or when it will start gelling with people and really taking off is when people stop trying to say this is the alternative, because you can't go to a concert. This is the alternative. It's not. It's just not. It's a different experience. It's not worse or better, you know, maybe with a grain of salt of a little not better, but it's just a different experience. You know, you don't get you don't watch, and I don't want to sound artsy, I'm going to use an artsy comment, you don't watch a DVD of Les Miserables and then go watch Les Miserables in a theater and get the same experience. You know, it's never going to happen. Doesn't matter whether you're using, you know, Dolby Atmos 8.1 surround sound with, you know, thunder blasters under your chair or what. It's just it's never going to be the same, because it's about human interaction, and it's about heartbeats, and it's about the band feeling a crowd and changing how they perform because of the crowd. Like, you just don't get those elements. So it is, for want of a better term, and it's a little harsh term, but there is a staleness there that will never go away from those kind of performances. And for a band like us, that's difficult, because, you know, that's the heart and soul of music to us. That's the stuff we feed off, and that's the stuff that makes us fucking get up, you know, and get energized and believe in music and love music. And when you take those elements away, it in the long term, you know, in the short term, it's you can do it, but in the long term, it's a very different kind of beast. And then of course the flip side to that coin is, there is, I mean, you know, like, I'm a big film guy. There's something very cool about having something produced and cleaned up and released to someone. That is great. But to say that's an alternative, or just a left turn to a right turn to a live show, is to me still kind of crazy. It's just, they're just two such separate beasts. And the reason, I think the only reason that they're kind of being compared at the moment is because of things like COVID, and because they can be, I guess, in a way, because you do now have to make the choice. Like, well, all the choices being made for you. You can't go see a live band, so you watch a live stream. No different to, you know, the 70s and 80s and 90s of bands releasing live videos. I mean, God, Live Aid, man. When I watched Queen perform at Live Aid, that blew me away. And I saw things about that band that I would never see listening to their albums or seeing their film clips, you know. And that's the other bonus to these things, is that you see a side to a band that you would never otherwise see. And that's an amazing thing.
Absolutely. It's an odd time that we find ourselves in, and I like you, I think it's going to be something that's going to be harmonious, I suppose. So I think it's going to be run in parallel. You know, once live music is finally back on deck, you know, it will be something that will be run alongside of it, you know, and there'll be a couple of cameras set up or something like that, and people can stream it from Belgium, you know, because they're over there, I don't know, running the clock tower or something. and it's, you know, I think it's going to be something that's definitely going to come across to it. You did actually mention in there a question that I had written down, and that was, as a muso myself, I find it really a bit disheartening to play to an empty room. Yeah. How did you keep the energy up for that whole performance where you were just playing ostensibly to, well, at one point you were playing to Ian, who was in the crowd in the seats, but the vast majority of it, you were playing to empty seats, right? How do you keep the energy up?
Yeah, it's different, isn't it? It's very, very different. And as you're right, you know, any musician knows, well, I mean, most people know, but, you know, musicians, I guess, feel it more is that energy that a crowd gives, and playing in front of someone changes everything. It's a powerful thing, I think. The way we handle it, I mean, originally we were going to have us just facing each other, like having no crowd element. So it wasn't like a live show. It was just almost like a studio rehearsal. Mm-hmm. We did something similar with that in a studio in Germany called Ghost City Studios, where we recorded a couple of tracks. And that was just us literally facing each other and feeding off each other. I guess that the benefit a little bit for Carnival, that particular project, or this particular project in that respect, is that we are a little bit, you know, I guess you could call it selfish when it comes to live, that there is definitely an element of each song or each performance that is us just feeding off each other. And we never look at each other and we never talk to each other, but it's definitely feeding off the other band, the other people on stage. There's an internal energy there that can keep you going for a pretty long time. Mm-hmm. And that's very different to a crowd energy, but it's still a pretty strong energy, you know. I think that's what we concentrated on. We just concentrated on the fact that, okay, this is a 10-year, and that was the other bonus. There was a theme there. There was a thematic that we could focus on. So this was a 10-year anniversary of an album. We could literally think of every gig we did over those 10 years and every crowd response. And some songs I was literally doing that. I remember doing a couple of songs and thinking, oh man, I remember playing this song in a tiny bar in Manchester. It was the bar that Elbow have their little sign above. I remember the guy handing me a beer at the end of it. Like, as I was playing it, I remembered that moment. I think a lot of the live stream was all of us in different ways doing that, remembering different times where we performed these songs and finding, you know, that's an internal way of finding energy to feed into the song. But yeah, a mixture of that. And yeah, as I said, a lot of just feeding off each other and you know, enjoying, I think, after having done it for so long, that album.
It's, You guys definitely have a prowess live. You are very well. I mean, particularly in the prog community, people know Carnival, but they know you live as well. I mean, the amount of comments I've seen on the bottom of your download, you know, videos that are up on YouTube, where you're playing Thermata or something like that, and people are going, "Wait, who the hell are these guys? This is you know, I saw these guys. That's me at the front jumping in the pit, you know, all that kind of stuff."
Yeah.
I know that there's a new album in the works. I don't know if you can talk about it. He had a little quote a little while. I dug up a quote from you guys, and you said, "In the past, you guys said we try to speed up writing and make the frequency of album releases a lot faster. We're completely mystified by the songwriting process, and that's the bottom line for us. We don't know what we're doing." Is that still the case? do you just jam out in sort of a tour bus and just go, "Oh, that's cool. Let's add that into this," or you know, are you still mystified by it? And how are you getting that next one out, you know? Because obviously we heard the new song at the end of it as well, which was a great surprise.
Yeah, it was fun to play that. I mean, there's I think we have some stupid quotes over time, but there's an element of truth in there for sure, man. In answer to your question, we're writing. We never really stop writing. You know, we take periods away from the studio, but we never stop writing. The way this band's always done things is hit it hard, walk away, let it ferment, breathe, digest, whatever you want to call it, come back to it, tear it apart, and then rebuild it. And that's, you know, that's how we've always written. That's how we always will write. And, you know, I think the quote that you're referring to is more referring to us just having no idea when or how that's going to happen. I mean, some of those gaps, some of those songs literally were written over 4 years. Mm. Some of them were literally written in 3 weeks. Like, it just, it makes no sense to us. And never in any of those, on either of those two, you know, ends of the spectrum, are we going, let's make this song so cool or whatever that it's going to take 4 years to write, man. Yeah, sweet. It's not that. It's like, it's just banging your head against the wall going, this is not working. This is not working. But, you know, just never giving up as well, you know. So I think that's what that quote's referring to. It's just that, what? What is that magic? When do you say a song's finished? You know, it's never finished. You just kind of give up trying to make it better. And that's cool, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And that's, to be honest, that's kind of the philosophy of the band as well. We've always been those guys. And, you know, even as far as like songwriting and all the rest of it, it's always been, let's do what we can when we can, and when we can't, we can't. You know, it's cool, it's fine. We've all got other lives, we've got other projects, musical and outside of music. Let's do our best with what we have and try and make what we can. And it's always been a long-term project for us. You know, we knew it was never going to die in that sense of the word. It's always going to be there for us. It was always something we could come back to and really sink our teeth into when we wanted to or needed to. And yeah, we've got a lot of material for the new album, you know, some completely finished, like All It Takes, that we got to play, and some, like some of those songs where we just bash our heads against brick walls for you know, months at a time. But I love what we have, and I can't wait to get it finalized and push it out there, man. It's going to be a pleasure to release. But yeah, it is. It's a strange process, man. Very strange process. We definitely don't do it like anybody I can think of. So yeah, it's a little different for us.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely. I mean, there's some bands who release stuff like clockwork. You know, and then there are bands who completely don't. I mean, I can think of a couple in the prog sphere. Obviously, Dream Theater are very, every 2 years there's a new album, and, you know, it's how it is. And then they go and they tour, and then there's a new album, and da-da-da-da-da. And then you've got bands like Tool, who just sort of don't do anything for 13 years. You know, and you guys seem to be sort of – it's a case of when it's ready, right?
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah, for us it definitely is. It's when it's cooked, and our oven just seems to not know what temperature it's on. So it just we don't know when it's going to be finished. You know, it bounces around. Some days you feel real close, and other days you feel like, we need to reassess some of this, and we do. You know, we're never going to release something that we're not completely happy with. So, and we are a little bit selfish on that aspect, which infuriates, I'm sure, our audience, and definitely infuriates our management. So we're fairly unapologetic about that, but I know it's frustrating. It's frustrating for us too, don't worry.
So what are the plans going forward for Carnival now? Obviously, at the moment it's very difficult because the world is still in the grips of this COVID pandemic. Let's say tomorrow COVID was gone. What would you hope would be the things to do with yourself and with the guys from Carnival? Are we talking national tour? Are we talking international? Are we, you know, what's in the pipeline, or what do you hope would be in the pipeline?
Yeah, man. Well, yeah, I think that's the question, isn't it? I mean, to say if COVID was gone, I mean, that just changes everything, because it's really not going anywhere anytime soon, is it? So that's hard to think like that. But I guess, you know, if I was to fully fantasize, I mean, well, it's very easy to fully fantasize, because if COVID was gone, man, we would be booking international tours tomorrow, because, you know, we're a band that loves to play live, and we haven't played live in so long, not properly, not like, you know, bus tours, long Australian tours. We want to get out there and play. We'd love to play. I think some of that live stream, you can feel it in there, this angst, this frustration that we just want to do this more often, you know. So definitely international touring, definitely national touring, a lot more songwriting. I think one of my biggest disappointments in COVID, because when it first happened, we were like, oh man, we're all stuck in Perth, and everyone's like, oh, awesome, let's use this, you know, let's slam into the studio and just write. And it started a bit that way, but there's something about COVID, and there's something about that mental blanket that is really hard for us. And I haven't analyzed this personally too much, I don't think, so I'm kind of spitballing here, but I know that what we've hoped to achieve, and we have achieved, don't get me wrong, but I know what we hope to achieve in the COVID time in the last 18 months is not what we set out to achieve. And I know a lot of that is to do with mental fatigue, you know, this kind of carpet fog that's kind of over everybody, the fear related to it. You know, we're not a band that feeds on those things. We're a band that feeds on the exact opposite, you know, open minds, love, energy, you know, fun times. That's what feeds us. So it's a very difficult environment for a band like this to thrive in. And we've really felt that, you know, each personally, mentally, you know, physically, it's we've definitely felt that. And that's been my biggest frustration with all of this. And what I look forward to is, and you know, as I said, there's a fantasy and there's a reality. And I hate mixing the two. I always have for some reason, but you know, the fantasy aside, there will be a time where we can tour again. Will it be like we used to tour? Probably not, but it doesn't matter. It'll be what it'll be. And when that time comes, it'll feel great, you know? And that's something that is great and something that we're really looking forward to. And using that kind of energy to make the most of what time we have here now as well as what we're trying to do. And, you know, some days you got it, some days it's there and other days it's not. And that's okay.
You mentioned that you'd love to get out touring. And let's be honest, everyone in the music industry wants to get out and tour. And get back on stage. There are some really incredible bands from Australia at the moment, getting around some great metal bands, some great prog guys who are just starting to come up through the ranks. Who would you like to see go on tour with you, whether it be international or here in Australia?
It's a good question, man. There are some amazing bands out there. The thing about Carnival, I think, when I think about that question, is we like to be eclectic and we like difference. So, you know, the bands that I think of that are kind of proggy and are like us are bands that I probably wouldn't necessarily tour with. But oh god, man, that's a difficult question. Yeah, there's just too many. It's just too many. I think outside the circle, like, we always wanted to do something with you know, incorporating some kind of documentary element or some kind of comedy thing, but you know, it's kind of been done and all the rest of it. It's just I don't know. I don't really know how to answer that question except to say that all of them, all of them. You know, we've tossed up things like getting back to our style of music. Like, we'd love to play with one of our first ever tours was with Sydney band Cog. Bands like She Had, like all the ones that are our peers, you know, that they're the ones that I'd love to tour with, but it's very difficult to make those kind of tours happen. And then otherwise, when we do tour, the bands we generally tour with are bands that are, you know, as you say, like new and up and coming bands of the moment, or whoever's, you know, looking like they're jumping and that energize us musically or whatever at the time. So that changes pretty regularly. But oh god, man, so much good music out there.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously there's a lot in Australia as well, and there's a lot from overseas as well that are doing some amazing work. Some great prog bands that are just sort of starting out. You know, has there been anything that you've discovered over this wonderful time that is COVID, that you've thought, any bands that you've gone, these guys are really cool, you know, and, you know, would you mind sharing them?
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I know in the COVID times, I've kind of gone back to my comfort zone as well.
Okay.
I've punched out a bunch in this period. I punched out a bunch of like Nusrat Ali Khan, Peter Gabriel, King Crimson, you know, just bands that sort of you can listen to and get a bit lost in. A lot of blues, a lot of world music. These are the kind of things that I'm kind of indulging myself in, and then otherwise it's kind of studio time. To be honest, I'll be deadly honest with you, man. I haven't listened to a lot of new music over this COVID period. I don't know why that is, because that's something that I normally do. I know Drew is a massive, like, he's the guy. He's the go-to guy when you want to, you know, like, he's always got someone popping. So he's the next big thing that he loves. I'm kind of the opposite, man. I'm that cat that kind of just sits back and listens to stuff that I love and kind of get lost in. I honestly can't think of anything in the last 2 or 3 months that I've listened to that's spanking new, that's kind of blown me away. And as, you know, again, I'm just a music fan in general. I've been listening to a lot of hip hop, and a lot of crazy, weird, just different music lately. So, that's been fun, but, nothing really to report at the moment.
That's all right. I mean, I've been undertaking a challenge myself to listen to every new prog album. I did it last year and I've on track this year, which is good.
That's good, man. I do kick myself for not doing that, and I should get better at that. That's probably a strike against me for not doing that more often, and I should get back into that.
I can link you the playlist that I have. That's there. So you might find some cool stuff. You also might think that, you know, that I don't know what I'm talking about, and why would I listen to all this stuff? So I mean, that's fine.
Hey, that's music, man. That's music. That's what it's about.
Absolutely. Now, I do have a question here. I want to get on to talking to some gear with you as well.
Sure,
it's a bit of a shame that we're not on video chat, despite the fact that this is an audio podcast, because you'd be able to see my gear behind me and we could probably nerd out over some stuff that I've got behind me here. But before I do that, there is a question that my co-host Hoggy had that it seems to be the bane of his existence every single time that you guys play in Perth. Yep. And I'm going to quote him directly on this one. I've got the message up here in front of me. It's, why in the hell do they play in such small clubs in Perth? It's 4 minutes since the tickets have been released and the tickets are like rock and horse shit. Why do they do it?
You see, you can't make everyone happy. Some people like that kind of small venue vibe. But no, I hear what he's saying, man. I hear what he's saying. It would be frustrating if you didn't get a ticket. Look, a lot of that's just based around touring schedules and you know, ratioing what's coming up and what's been and, you know, trying to find the best way to do it. Sometimes we feel guilty for doing shows. It's like, oh, you know, God, we're not a band that's just, we're not pumping out the next Britney Spears single. Radio's not playing us, you know. It's like, you know, you can't just sort of jump in and do a big venue in the middle of nothing with no release or no, you know, no new content for the kids, so to speak. but in saying that, I don't know, sometimes we do often just book small gigs because you just want that small gig feel, you know. I have there's a ratio of gig size to fun that I have. It's like, you know, really small sucks. We all know those small gigs that suck. But then you hit this kind of, the peak is around about 500 to 600, or maybe 800 if you're, you know, feeling glorious or like a, you know, someone on a mountaintop. But, and then after that, the sound quality and the vibe just drops off, you know, as you get higher and higher. And I honestly would way prefer to see a band in like a 500, even less, sort of 300, 400, 500 seat venue than a 2,000, 5,000 seat concert. And the one thing you do get in those big gigs is production quality, you know, mainly lighting, audio dies. You can't hear a thing. You're either hearing just the right side or the left side or neither. And I, you know, it's seeing the whites of people's eyes and looking people in the eye and feeling like you can actually get a chance to look at everybody in a room is big for me. And I know it is for the other guys as well. You know, those kind of gigs are awesome. And they just seem to have such more vehemency, you know, it's such a bite to them that you can't capture when the rooms get bigger and bigger. So that is a factor, but that's probably not why it's always happening. So I do apologize for all the people who have missed out on tickets. I know it's happened a lot, and I know we haven't done enough shows in Perth, especially Perth, you know, and there's other places like it that, you know, it can get frustrating. But, you know, hopefully soon we can fix that.
Well, you know, it's the economics of touring, right? At the end of the day, which we've spoken at long, postulated long and hard on this show about that. So I'm not going to go into that. I want to change gears a little bit here and just talk about some gear because the guitarists that listen to this show would kill me if I didn't. Specifically, I want to know whether or not you have a different rig when you play your home shows, i.e. stuff in Perth, and then your touring shows, and then your stuff overseas. I know a lot of people, myself included, I have a fly rig, and then I've got my big fuck off A-rig, which is sitting behind me, which is amps and bloody rack units and quad boxes and everything. And then you've got like that kind of B in between rig that's, you know, yeah, I'm going to Melbourne and I, yeah, okay, I'll just take one of those. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that how you run? Have you gone full digital using like a Kemper or an AX8 these days? Like where does it, tell us your rig. Go on, just, I'll stop talking.
Yeah, man. Yeah, happy to. So basically all three of us, John, Drew and myself, all have basically the same kind of setup now. I mean, over the years, it's changed a lot. There was a point where I had a couple of racks, like floating racks, eights that I used to have fun touring. But, you know, those the heady days of the kind of the big show are kind of gone.
Sure.
For many reasons, not just, you know, not like a we suck now kind of vibe, but just, the, you know, as you say, the economy of touring kind of thing. So,
yeah,
I mean, we're, all three of us have Axe FX racks that we use.
Yep.
And then that's like the what we call them A, B, and C rigs. So there's an A rig, a B rig, and a C rig. C is your European American touring rig, which is go minimum, go lightweight, got to be under 23 kilograms. Each box has to be under 23 kilograms so you can fly it. And that's basically nothing or very minimal analog effects. Most of it's in the digital rack. There's a few songs and a few sounds that we just can't replicate unless we have certain pedals. So, you know, each dude gets a you know, small allotment of I have to have this kind of pedal that we still sneak into the rig, the C rig.
Can you give us an example of one of those? Because I'm really curious. You've got me really curious now.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not really crazy personal effects. There's things like ZVEXs and analog delays, a lot of the electro harmonics gear, hogs and pogs, and you know, things like that that, that are very specific. And I still am yet to hear a proper replicator of it on an Axe FX front or even a you know, any of those things. Really, I know they're pretty close, but it's, I don't know. There's just something about it that, and usually it's a lot of it's just in crossover signal stuff. So you can't just throw it, you know, in the box behind you. It's got to be in front of you, right next to your guitar, and you've got to be moving it in certain ways to make it do what you want it to do. So you know, they're the main kind of things. There's a couple. I've got like a vanilla compressor. I don't even know what brand it is. Actually, there's a compressor that I use for a few songs that I, you know, can't live without. But these are all pretty small little pedals. There's nothing crazy in there. So they're kind of the ones that we have to have that we carry around with us. And then so that's the C. The B sort of incorporates them and the heads. So you know, C is obviously we just pick up backup heads and we cry. B is we can take our own heads, or at least we get one head and then we use a backup head of some form, or at least we know what backups we're going to use. And obviously hired cabinets and stuff. And then the A rig is you can have a bit of fun, so you chuck in the extra bits and pieces that you otherwise don't get a chance to use. But that's a lot less than it used to be, I must state now. John's a little different. Drew and I can get away with cutting down quite a lot, but John's sound is pretty specific. So he still has a lot of pedals that he tromps around with wherever we go. And obviously, you know, if we're doing a show in Perth really is the only place that we can use. We've got some yummy greenback old, you know, 60 cabs that we like for obvious reasons, because we've used them for so long and we've found the ones that work for us. So you definitely get to hear the best version of us in Perth. But it's not that different these days, I must say. It's a pretty fine art of getting all that stuff down to – and we have spent a lot of time using those Axe effects and things like that. And, you know, in the studio, John, you know, signal checking, generating signals and putting them next to each other and finding the troughs and the bits that we need to fix to make it sound more like how the pedal sounds. So, it's a pretty fine art, the old digital world these days.
Oh, absolutely. It's also incredible. I mean, growing up myself, I'm 31, not super old, but I'm old enough to remember the old, you know, little Squire amplifiers and things like that.
Yeah, man.
And I mean, nowadays for $90, you can plug into a plug into a desk and into a door and get every sound under the sun. You know, it's just...
Yeah, you can. That's right.
It seems a little unfair, to be honest. And your guitars. Now, I believe you've... I know you've got a Les Paul Custom, and I know you've got a swathe of PRSs. Mm-hmm. And some Mayonnaise, I believe.
Yeah, man. Yeah, a couple of Mayonnaise. They made me this beautiful 7-string custom guitar that I use a lot in the studio. It's not so easy to use live because it's pretty precise. Mm. So I very rarely get to play it live. But there's a Duval there as well that I do play live, little 6-string Mayonnaise, another 7-string. I'm not really a 7-string guy, but they're fun to mess around with. Mm. The PRSs, the Les Paul Customs, great. I really only use that for Dead Man. It's always, I can't use any other guitar for that. Mm-hmm. It's got to be that Les Paul for Dead Man, and a couple of other songs. But that really only gets a Guernsey for those songs. Mm. And then it's mainly the PRSs are the workhorses, man. They're the ones that we always go back to. Custom C24, got a couple of them, green to blue. One's the Artist Series, so it's a different neck. Mm-hmm. And then Drew's got kind of the same two or three. They're just workhorses that we just use majoritively. Mm. And then there's a baritone there, a couple of baritones. As a Telecaster baritone we've been messing around with, which has been nice.
Mm-hmm.
Again, most of them end up just being studio stuff, and then live we again, it's that ABC thing. And when you're touring Europe, you can't take, you know, kind of, we're not that big a band, so you got to get this into three guitars each kind of vibe. So, you know, that's usually my blue PRS, my green PRS, and my my Les Paul. But you know, it's nice to just sneak in a couple of extra guitars every now and then, because it makes things a lot easier.
Absolutely. And it gives the guitarists in the audience a bit of extra eye candy too.
It does. Yeah. Well, they sound so different. And, you know, guitarists know it. And it's just, they sound so different. And it's nice hearing songs differently, you know. And playing songs that have never been played on a certain guitar gives it an entirely different feel. It's really weird. But, you know, we feel it. I know people hear it when we get a chance to do that.
Mm. And you guys experiment with some pretty wacky tunings too. Do, for example, I think it's the Martyr is in drop, the three low strings are in drop B, but the rest of them are standard tuning.
Things so it's like missing that. The two middle ones, yeah. That's kind of the go-to Carnival tuning is, yeah, BF sharp B, GBE. That was the one Drew had when I first met him. He was messing around with that, just loving that low chunk sound. There's the classics, the dad phase and the dad dads and the gad dads and all ones you just kind of go to. But we often just do it just to get out of headspace, you know. That kind of started not so much from trying to be technical and crazy. It just started from, you know, this pattern is just, I can't play it any other way. Like, I need that pattern, or like, I've got no ideas. Let's put it into this tuning. So I've got some fresh hay or fodder to mess around with in this song. And it's helped us out so many times from that way. There's quite a few songs where Drew's in a totally different tuning that I'm in. And that's just because when we wrote it, each part just required different kind of feels and vibes. So we just ended up there. And I remember there's a couple of times I've kind of like, oh, you in that tuning for that song? He's like, yeah. I'm like, oh, wow. I had no idea you were in that tuning, man. It's kind of fun. In retrospect, to find out what the hell's going on sometimes.
Now, right at the start of this interview, you mentioned that you're a movie guy. You like movies and so on and so forth. Now, that's something I didn't know. When you say you're a movie guy, is this you like going and watching the Marvel movies, or are you, you know, an actual, like, you know, Americana lover? Tell us about that, because this is something I don't know if many people actually know.
Not really, man. I mean, I did film at university in Melbourne, and always my goal was to be a filmmaker. Like, I wanted to be a filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So after uni, I potted around a few jobs on film sets and, you know, did a bit of, you know, indie filmmaking and stuff. And but my family owned a music store. My brother was big on music. I was big on music as well. But then I just got so kind of sucked into the music world and left film behind as far as that career move went. And I kind of always regretted it because it's always been a big part to me. But the, other than that, nowadays, it's like I still love doing, like, I do all hobby 3D animation stuff and, and love 3D animation, building, you know, writing, creating whatever you can. Still hobby stuff, but it's awesome fun. And then, yeah, just a film buff, man. Just watch, not so much Marvel, you know, I watch that. I've got two young boys, so, you know, I get my fair share of Marvel, but no, I'm more a, oh, man, fucking anything, you know, old school horror. I used to love horror, you know, abstract filmmaking. David Lynch, big David Lynch fan, you know, Clive Barker kind of guy. But, yeah, man, film, always wanted to get back into it. Will one day, maybe. Who knows? We'll see. Maybe in my retirement.
No, it's it is interesting when you speak to people who are, you know, I think it's safe to say that you're an idol for many people, because, you know, you're on stage, you're a musician, you know, you're part of a great band that people love and so on and so forth. And you become sort of almost by osmosis, you become sort of a bit of a, I don't want to say a mythological feature, but, you know, you become something that people hold up on a pedestal almost. So it's always interesting when I hear that people have got these really, Not so much left of field, but, you know, like you, I'm a movie guy. You know, John Petrucci is into smoking meats and whiskey, and beard
I'm
oil apparently
whiskey
now.
Too,
oh, we can have a total talk about whiskey. It is just so interesting to get more a human element to people, I suppose. But you're a whiskey guy, so. You've got me now. Go on. What's in the collection?
it sounds wanky. No, I can't. No, I like whiskey. I like the occasional cigar, things like that. I mean, I don't know. It's all just it's just embellishments on life, isn't it? Really,
you gotta
do the things you love and have fun with the things that you have fun with and. Back to the what you're saying about the pedestal thing, man. I think that's very true. I've always found that weird. You know, I think I used to do this gig in Melbourne where we just kind of helped. I had a friend who was in PR and she was looking after Tom Morello, and she said, "Oh, you know,
we took Tom Morello for." I was like, "Tom Morello, man, I love this guy." And I kind of made a promise to myself to just treat him like a human being, because he is. And like, no cat wants to sit there and have some guy, you know, lavishing about him, and, you know, like that's not a night out for a guy like that. He just wants someone to talk to and have fun with, and that every human does, you know.
And, you know, you can't help but, when you like someone, you can't help but, you know, sort of fan a bit. And there's nothing wrong with that either. That's cool too. I made a promise to myself to just try and be human around everybody, you know, and they're human back to you, and I think you get the most out of people. And we're all human, man. Everybody's human. And, you know, it's nice to have people that you respect and admire.
Focus on as something that you want to achieve and aspire to. But, man, everybody's yin and yang, good and bad.
last question I do want to ask. This is sort of a bit of a, it's a bit of a mainstay on this one. It's a question that we've asked, you know, the likes of Rick Wakeman, you know, John Petrucci and millions of others that we've had on the show, because apparently we've had millions now on the show. You've all heard that. If you were contractually obliged to play one song every night for the rest of your career, what would it be? And it doesn't have to be yours. It can be anyone's. But I'm curious to hear the answer.
Contractually obliged to play one song every night. Well, I want to say The Ring Cycle by Wagner, because it goes forever, but I won't, because that's a little ostentatious. fuck, that's a good question, man. It'd be something fun. It'd be something that you get a lot of enjoyment out of. it would have to be if you had to do it every single night. Because I know, you know, when you talk to about you talk to musicians that's that repetition of song, and you know that when bands you feel for those bands that have such a cool catalog, but they're only known for like two songs, and they have to play these songs every night, and they must get so fucking sick of it. I know I would. So yeah, it'd have to be something fun, man. God, I can think of some cool, probably like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay.
I reckon. Yeah, something crazy with a big upbeat middle section, but some moods, you know. I mean, if you're going to do it every night, you want some moods, you want some highs and lows. Yeah, maybe it's ridiculous answer, but I'm going to say Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen.
I think that's as good an answer as any. Now, before we wrap up here, is there anything in particular you want to mention?
I don't think so, man. No, it's been a really good chat, Dave. Probably just say, you know, to the people who follow us and listen to this and like the band, you know, thank you guys for all your love and listening and ears over the years that you've listened to this band, and just know that we are, you know, apologetic/unapologetic for how long it is between the stuff that you get to hear from us, and you know, we want it to be great, and we feel like we're getting there, and we look forward to releasing some new stuff to you guys at some point in the future.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, Mark, thank you so much for your time this evening. It's been an absolute blast having you on the show. And
yeah, good chat, man. Good chat.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you so much.
Awesome.
Thanks, man. Well, there you have it, an interview with 1/5 of the amazing Australian progressive giants, Carnivool. Thank you so much for listening. And just remember, if you're hearing this first, it means you're subscribed to our Patreon, and we really thank you for your support. You're a little bit of the way to helping us keep the show on the road whenever the shows come out these days. If you are not subscribed to that and you want to throw us a little bit of your hard-earned cash, we would really appreciate it to actually help us keep the show on the air. And you get access to really cool stuff like this interview before anyone else. So thank you again so much for listening. We really appreciate you lending us your ears. A new episode will be out very, very soon. Until next time, my name's Dave Ellis. We'll see you on the next one.
The 9/8 interview.